If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Je suis Charlie, and we are live with a new completely unnecessary podcast for Wednesday, January 14th, 2015, alongside somewhat sick, that's the norm, Ian Ferguson.
I don't feel well. I have high triglycerides.
I'm Pat Contrary. We'll get into your medical history in a bit. We have a packed show. We're going to be talking about the Ant-Man teaser that was just released, along with the Avengers Age of Ultron trailer number two.
Those.
A Steam event's sealed and graded on eBay right now. By the time you might be listening to this, it'll be over, the auction. A man hate buys 100 Rosalina Amiibo figures. That really makes me laugh when I say hate buys. The new 3DS XL was announced for February 13th in the U.S., along with Majora's Mask 3DS XL already being scalped, and the trade-in policy coming for GameStop, along with Nintendo Direct news of Wii games being sold on the eShop pretty soon. Nintendo no longer selling their products in Brazil due to tariffs and taxes. My Alicia Dragoon drama. Microsoft lays out their Let's Play guidelines for YouTube videos. Macho Man to the WWE Hall of Fame. And your Q&A. Ian, how are the triglycerides doing?
I'm falling apart, Pat. I got a...
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but I mean...
I got a routine lithium panel back, and they noted that my triglycerides have quintupled in the last year.
And for those out there, you want your triglycerides to be lower, not higher.
Right, right. Triglycerides don't get superpowers.
It's not like you're playing a pinball game.
Eventually that could really affect organ function.
Liver, kidney?
Liver and kidney, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, gonna drink less and work out more. Try not to eat so many Twizzlers.
That's probably not the best thing. Or the Doritos is probably not the best either.
Well, baby steps, Pat.
Baby steps will be drinking apple juice instead of Doritos. That'd be the baby step. That's the step to the moon there.
I'm just going to get high before every podcast now instead of drinking Ballast Point.
I don't know why you don't come do yoga with me. I think that'd be great.
That would definitely lower my triglycerides. that's life. That's life for me.
I'm working on my DVD still, slowly but surely. It will get done. I will have a new Flea Market Madness out probably before the end of the month. And then I probably won't be able to get to any major work, though, until after that DVD gets shipped off to the production house, unfortunately. Hey, I have to do that. That's what pays the bills, besides this nice podcast. Anything else going on in Ian Land?
There was, but I've totally forgotten.
The triglycerides have taken over?
I just want to go home. I mean, here's the thing. Vonnie and I constantly, play fight over it, but she...
Better than clay fight.
She thinks that this is unreasonably cold weather, right? So, like, we have five of the heaviest, thickest blankets on our bed. So, it's, like, one-third Vonnie... 3/3 blanket, and 0.5/3 me. And I know the math doesn't add up, but it does. But the past few days, I've wanted that fortress of blankets. I've wanted to do nothing but sleep.
Let's remind people that we live in the most temperate part of the country.
Yes.
And so for cold for us, it's like 57 degrees is cold for us.
Especially for people like Pat and I, because we're from places where it's much, much colder. Buffalo is an icebox 6 months of the year. I wake up in sweats because, I've got one blanket on, and Vonnie always accuses me of stealing all the blankets. I'm like, I have no reason to steal the blankets.
How about a nice robe? A nice robe with a hood? That would keep you warm.
That'd be nice.
I'll show you mine that I got for Christmas.
Maybe I'll get some...
Because it's like you're surrounded by a blanket.
Maybe basically. Just some pajamas, and then I wouldn't need any toppings,
No, like the pizza. I'll sell you on the robe, because the robe's like a giant blanket that you snuggle up in.
All right.
Or just get a Snuggie.
So, let's start off the podcast with a couple of trailers. We're gonna talk about some movie news. Movie news. The Ant-Man teaser came out, and I wanted to kind of spearhead this one because I've been really...
You've been down on it since the announcement Edgar Wright was leaving
as director. I've been really down on it since they said that. I love Edgar Wright as a director, and I think he could have done something really fun and great with Ant-Man. The teaser that was shown, though, was pretty decent. What was interesting to me about it, because it's just a teaser, there's not a lot of story shown. I mean, the suit looks nice and all that. There's a couple of...
looks great.
There's a couple of effect shots that look cool, but what I like is that they build it up, and it plays perfectly to Ant-Man, too. It's got this very serious tone, and the only two times Paul Rudd talks in the trailer, he's kind of like... He's taking the piss out of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is still going to be... And that was the problem. I was afraid with Edgar Wright gone, they would try to remove some of the levity of the character, and it doesn't look like they're going to do that. And I'm going to need to see a lot more to... get behind it fully again, but at this point, I'm more inclined to see it.
I was originally down on this and with the Avengers film because Hank Pym, the original Ant-Man and a founder of the Avengers, along with Wasp, weren't in the Avengers.
Right.
And so what they decided to do was place them sort of in a sort of, I guess, prior generation of heroes where Hank Pym was the original. Now you have the second Ant-Man, Scott Lang, and he's passing the suit along to
him. And he's great.
I don't know much about that character. I like the original Hank Pym character a lot.
Lang is fantastic.
But I understand why they're doing it. Because if Lang is the prominent one now, it makes more sense to have him be the one in the movies.
And he's, I don't know, he fits, I think he's going to fit in better with the current crop of Marvel superheroes they have. The way they have them talking, wisecracking, the attitude.
Versus Hank. Who's a little more dry.
Right. Because I think what he's called in the comic, I think Scott is Astonishing Ant-Man. And it's definitely a more comedic
take on it.
A more comedic take on it.
So you do have Wasp's daughter, or Hank and Wasp's daughter, being played by Evangeline Lilly as Hope Van Dyne. So she's going to be in it. So there is that somewhat connection. And, of course, Hank Pym is being played by Michael Douglas. So,
Who, by the way, I hate.
You don't like Michael Douglas?
I hate Michael Douglas. Well, there's two people that make me really, really cringe. Michael Douglas, Phil Collins. Michael Douglas is
one of them. What did Michael Douglas ever do to you?
He didn't have to do anything to me. I don't like his face.
Okay. But it's again, though, another good, at this point, they're not even coups. Casting coups because all their movies now, whether it's what's his name in Thor that got Odin to play, I can't think of it right now, Anthony Hopkins,
yes,
or any of those movies where they get these like grade A old school actors or older actors to appear, and they've now done this constantly.
Yep.
What did we just saw in Guardians of the Galaxy? We saw what's her name? I'm like blanking this early in the podcast, which is not good at all. That's not a good sign. Anyway, moving on. I'll get to that in a minute. So you were disappointed at first about Edgar Wright being gone, but now you don't mind as much. My reservations about an Ant-Man movie are just that I know he can also like grow up in size,
yes,
besides shrinking. I don't know how easily you could pull off multiple set pieces where he's just shrinking down without it getting repetitious. Unless it's done in a way where he constantly shrinks up and down to get away from, you know what I mean, from stuff like that, then it could be
If they
cool.
do it dynamically where he's up and down as, you know, for strategy, or, I mean, if there's something in the movie where suddenly he can't shrink down and now he's got to fight at normal size. But that was a concern of mine, too. Even going back to when Wright was doing it was, how are you going to get multiple set, like you said, multiple set pieces out of this without boring people, because eventually it's just going to look like scenery changes.
So I just remember Glenn Close from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So actors like Glenn Close, Jeff Bridges, you're getting these sort of seasoned actors that come in and give your movie legitimacy. And by now, these actors that come on, you know, like a Michael Douglas, they now realize these are good properties, they're run well. It's no longer taking that sort of risk.
Right.
That maybe Jeff Bridges back in 2008, that was a semi-risk to do it. So that's what I was trying to say before I just mind farted on Glenn Close's name for some reason. I was thinking of like Glenn Ross or something in my head.
Would you say your mind was closed?
So yeah, I think I'm cautiously optimistic about this movie. But if this was to say buy or sell a stock, I'd be neutral right now on Ant-Man. I'm going to see it, of course, but I'm mostly going to see it because I love Paul Rudd.
I do too.
And so that he's selling me in that role.
Yeah.
You know, if it was someone else, probably not. Which again goes to Marvel's credit of knowing how to cast these. At this point, you know, they haven't really swung and missed on any of their major casting decisions.
No.
When you think about it. So.
So, Avengers Age of Ultron is, I mean, also coming out, what, this year as well? I mean, we're getting a full plate.
Yeah, that's May. And yeah. Then I think, was it July, or is Ant-Man, correct?
Is Ant-Man. And they just released another trailer for it. And this one, kind of the opposite. It's not that I don't think it's going to be a good movie, but like I'm nitpicking stupid shit here. Like I don't like the voice they're using for Ultron. Doesn't sound dead or mechanical enough necessarily for me. I also don't like, even though this is, you know, kind of like a new, still a shorter trailer. They're really showing and hinting at bits of storyline that I'd rather just be left untouched. I mean, I realize...
Come on, really, though, for a major action movie, you don't think they're going to spoil some stuff?
No, they are. I just, I mean...
And so far, they haven't really revealed that much, honestly.
No, they haven't, but it's not so much what they're revealing or showing, it's what they're unveiling. It's that we're going to have another Hulk, you know, explosion, and this and that, and it's...
Honestly, though, what else can you do with the Hulk when he's part of a team, though? What else can you do with him? He's going to rampage. I mean, otherwise, he just sits around until he saves the day at the end when he Hulks up. And Hulk's only an interesting character when he's done as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. To me, he's not interesting almost in any other sort of way.
You need to read...
World War Hulk. Or
no,
whatever, yeah.
No, Planet Hulk. World War Hulk was the smash and bash payoff to Planet Hulk, which was fantastic. And that legitimized the character for me. But yeah, I don't necessarily like the way the Ultron sounds.
Thought they can always change, though, even the last minute.
Oh, I know.
Just digitize it a little bit more.
And just little things.
I actually thought he sounded more digitized in the first trailer, which you said you didn't see, versus the second one. It's like they almost dialed it back a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just little things that they're insinuating in the trailer that, who knows, maybe they're just tricking us or playing with us. It was a short trailer. But I'm not feeling it, I guess, as much as I am other movies coming up.
They haven't ruined, I'm not spoiling for you, they haven't shown Vision yet.
Yeah.
So they're keeping that in their back pocket.
True.
Probably till at least the final trailer, which will probably come out, I'd probably say March.
Oh, those miracles.
Vision's not a miracle. Miracle, Scarlet Witch, and Quicksilver.
Scarlet Witch, and Quicksilver.
Hey, they had to fit it in somehow without calling them mutants.
I'm sorry.
I think Miracle makes sense. They're miracles.
It does. It's just...
They're the Marvel miracles. They should just call them Marvels.
The Marvels.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the name
comes
from.
They have Vision.
I think it's going to be a fun movie. I think it's going to be a lot better than the first movie. I don't like rewatching the first Avengers movie. I said it before. The first Avengers movie is the first 40 minutes. They come together, have a few fights. Loki does his thing where he's Hitler in Germany. And then they're on the freaking helicarrier for like an hour before the last battle. That's the movie. There's like three major set pieces of the entire movie. And most of it's them on the helicarrier. Oh, we're not a team. We're a dynamite or whatever. Ready to explode. It's like, all right.
I loved
then
it.
Then you have the 35-minute battle at the end, which, okay, it wears on you, but it's fun in the end.
I loved it when I saw it, but I never went back to it.
No.
Specifically. Specifically because I knew
the story's shit.
It wouldn't hold up to repeated viewings. But it still doesn't make it a shit movie.
No, I didn't say the movie's shit. I'm just saying it's not interesting to watch again.
It did what it needed to do.
It's like a comic. When you go back and reread your favorite comics, you want to reread the ones that necessarily have the best action but the best story.
Yes.
And it's the same thing with the movies.
Yeah.
You know. But I think it's going to be better though because all that how they got together crap's out of the way and now we can amp it up and have more interaction between the characters, and you're going to have the dissidence of the team, and you know more of the character arcs coming. Because most of the characters didn't have a story arc at all in the first Avengers movie. It was all about let's fight together. That was the big arc. Let's find a way to fight
Hulk
together.
Hulk kind of did, which is why I'm wondering why it seems like they're going to rehash the Hulk shit. I wish they would just focus on the other characters a little bit more.
I think they're going to obviously lay the seeds for Civil War is going to be in this movie.
They show
that in the teaser. They show Thor with his hand around Tony Stark's neck. So there's some animosity building up here. We'll see what happens. And then you're off and running after this. After this is, I think, the last year you're going to have only two Marvel movies in the year. I think starting next year, I think it's three already, or maybe the year after. Basically,
are we really only getting two this year? Just Ant-Man and Avengers?
Yep.
Huh.
And then next year you have Civil War, Doctor Strange. Then already, I think 2017, that's when you have Guardians of the Galaxy, and we're going to be dead by then, because I'm getting so old. So
my triglycerides are just... my triglycerides are just going to be coming out of my nose, my mouth.
Too bad it weren't, like, midichlorians. You couldn't, like, control stuff with them. You couldn't, like, force choke someone or move objects, you know?
The triglycerides are with you. Always.
Speaking of useless things... A Steam Events cart, a graded sealed one, came up for auction on eBay. And boy, did the internet go nuts. Again, just like in 2010 when a Yahoo reported when a woman found like a box of old Nintendo stuff and put it up for auction, and one happened to be a box Steam Events and went for like $11,000, and the world exploded. Oh, all your video games are worth tons of money. And it brought in all the fucking creepers and all the profiteers and all the people trying to scam. And it's been downhill since then. Well, this is another opportunity to have to happen again, in a way. But what happened here was, by the time we're saying this, there's less than a day left, and it was up to $100,000, and that's when sites like Polygon were reporting it, and IGN. But even they were smart enough this time to say that most of these bids are probably fake and it's not going to be paid for.
Good.
Which doesn't usually happen.
Good, yeah, because I was going to say, the story is disinteresting to me at this point because I knew that was bullshit. I didn't read those articles. I'm glad they at least had the foresight to be like, okay, let's do our research here. Because, I mean, I can't tell you how many people sent this to me. It's like, you do realize that an eBay bid is not like...
No, it's not a contract.
It's not a signed contract. No. This game is not going for $100,000. No.
They're not bound unless you sue them, but that's not going
to
happen.
You have to wait until the dust settles before you can actually see what something went for.
Because, what was it, in 2014, I think it was early 2014, when the label list NWC went for $100,000, and they were all joke bids, and everyone reported like it was real. It's like, no, you assholes, of course it wasn't.
Right.
You know, it's like, if you did even a little bit of, first of all, a little bit of common sense, but research, you know that it's fake. Unless it gets verified that it's usually like on a website form, and you have the person who bought it say, here it is, here's my name written on it, that you know it's mine, and this is what I paid. Otherwise, you don't know.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously, it has a chance. A lot of bids were taken away, and now it's back to down to like $35,000. We'll see where it ends up. I think the most valuable single game, I believe, up to this point has been a complete in-box Atari Air Raid, which went for around, I want to say, $33,000. Because I think there's only one that had the manual, and there was one or two without the manual. I'm not a big Atari guy, but this got a chance to top it. But here's the thing about Steam Events, besides the fact that it's culturally worthless to the history of video games.
Yeah.
Worthless. There's only going to be, talking 20, 30 years now, a limited amount of people that will be interested in a game like Steam Events Complete versus NWC carts, or games that have some sort of historical significance. May not be worth as much, but it's going to be a lot harder to find those buyers.
Right, and that's something that I was thinking as well in talking to customers about. If we see this hit 35, which is it's at now, if it sells for this, it's not like... I think we're going to be hitting the ceiling with something like this at some point in the future because, like, as you stated, it does not have the cultural significance or the interest of collectors necessarily that something like an NWC cart would have.
And even mainstream, like, casual collectors that may not know much about it.
So when you buy an NWC cart, it's pretty... It's you're going to be able to resell it for the same, if not more... most likely for quite some time. I have a feeling that if this goes for 35-40k, if the person ever decides to get rid of it, I don't think they're necessarily going to get that back.
Or this is not going to be a guarantee, or this is going to be the new sort of standard price. Because again, if there's only 6 or 7 people willing to spend this much money on this, and this could only be a one-time thing, or who knows if there's shenanigans going on with this, because maybe there's like 2 or 3 sealed Steam Events out there. Maybe people are trying to push it up for their value.
Right.
The point is that there's not going to be 20 people willing to spend $30,000 on a complete in-box sealed Steam Events.
No.
They're not going to be. We saw that when back in, again, 2010, when the Steam Events came out, and then you had some asshole try to buy 3 or 4 of them in the corner of the market. And he had to bid them up himself to get that price up to like $10,000 each time, Or else what happens is all it takes is for a price to plummet for something like this, a piece like this, is that if two people own it, and that's like, say that knocks out a third or a half of the potential buyers at a certain price value, each one that comes up next will drop in price.
Right.
Because it's such a niche item. It's like the difference between, even if this is technically, even if obviously there's less probably sealed stadium events than an NWC cart, is the difference between having a Detective Comics 27, which is culturally significant, versus, you know, well, Detective Comics number one is worth a lot, but you're going to have a hell of a lot harder time selling Detective Comics number one because nothing happens in Detective Comics number one. 27 is the first Batman. That's the one people want.
Right.
So even if there's less number ones, you're going to have a hard time offloading that. I say that now, even though they're probably both worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, but you see what I'm saying, though. You're always gonna have a buyer for 27. You're not always gonna have a buyer for number one.
Well, I just look at it this way: cultural significance at a lower price versus no cultural significance at a higher price. You're going to be able to keep the value of the lower priced, more culturally significant item for a longer time than you will a fucking stadium events, which I would use to mop up my jizz.
And we always talk about this and why I don't like this game. And if people you say, well, you don't like it because you don't have it, you don't honestly think I could have owned one by now. You honestly don't think I could have shelled down the money if I really wanted one. It's not about that. This represents the worst side of video game collecting. And I know you hate game collecting in all forms for the most part, but this represents a game that is only valuable because of rarity and rarity alone. Right. And it's a game you could easily look on the shelf and play in another form and it's the exact same game. And it's not a good game. It's a tech demo for the power pad.
Yeah.
So all those things put together makes me not want it for that much, you know, for that amount of money. You know, I balked at buying one when they were a grand loose. And now they're like $2,500 or $3,000 loose. I still didn't think it was worth it. So that shows you where I'm coming up.
Sure. Speaking of stupid collectors.
A lot of hate in this podcast so far.
Well, I mean, not really, but people are horrible.
Why does Ian hate everything?
Why? Because a man bought 100 Rosalina amiibos just so fans couldn't fucking have them. It's the type of guy who lubes up with ketchup and fists himself for fun on a weekend night. I mean, literally, the guy has bought 100 Rosalina amiibo figures. He did so by using addresses of his friends and family. So his friends and family are assholes, too, or they just don't know what he's doing.
Were they complicit, or did they not know what he's doing?
Yeah, I mean, they don't really... who knows if they know. And, I mean, the only evidence that this has actually happened is a couple of pictures of amiibo piles with him giving, like, the middle finger. But he says he plans on doing it for future characters, too, that he doesn't like. And to read him talk about it, I mean, he just sounds like a basement-dwelling fucking scumfuck.
He's obviously socially and or mentally disturbed, obviously, to do this.
Yeah.
I guess his online moniker is Nintendo Nuggets.
It's Daily Dose and Mario to Plumber.
Oh, Nintendo Nuggets is where they interviewed him.
Yes.
Daily Dose and Mario the Plumber are his online
monikers. He says, and I quote, "I do not appreciate Rosalina appearing in almost every recent Mario game to date. The fact Nintendo promotes her so much and people praise her is just disgusting," he said. Daily Doves continued, "I hate her fans, too. I know for a fact her amiibo will be among the most popular, which is why blah, 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 shit character designs." He also says that he's going to buy Lucina, Palutena, Robin, and Zero Suit Samus in the hundreds so that fans can't get them, which leads me to believe that it's not just Nintendo. It's not just Rosalina. It seems like he has a problem with women and women as well. I'm just going to point out,
who's Palutena? I don't know that one.
The princess from fucking Kid Icarus.
Okay.
I mean, so he's singled out 1, 2, 3, 4, five okay. female what, Nintendo
okay.
characters.
If it's only two or three, I said okay. If it's five, then yes, you have some sort of weird sort of animosity towards women. We can talk about like a psychological profile of this guy, but it's pretty obvious what type of person this is.
Yeah.
I honestly feel bad because he obviously has some mental issues. This isn't just a guy being an asshole. And plus, well, he obviously has the money to buy 100. He blew $1,300 plus shipping and taxes on just a Rosalina figure alone.
No, I think he said that's how many he's... $1,300, did you say?
$1,300.
Yeah, yeah.
That's 100 times $13.
And then he said he's put in a lot more, and he has an additional $35,000 to invest in the figurines. $35,000, not
$3,500. This is not a good person. Obviously, he has mental issues. It's just a shame. It's really a shame. because there are people that just want one and they won't be able to get it. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
I wish these stores had a policy where you can only buy one. Pre-order, you know what? You can get one.
Right. Don't care how many addresses you have. I mean, you can only do so much to do pre-order one, but like one per card, that even limits you a little bit.
One per shipping address. If you want to get 100, you're going to have to go through a hell of a lot of trouble to get 100.
Right.
Yeah. I hate her fans too. Yeah, this guy has some issues.
Yeah. I hate her. I hate her fans. I hate the way she looks. And oh, by the way, I hate these other four women characters. So I'm going to buy a bunch of these. And
I know for a fact her amiibo will be among one of the most popular. No, it'll just be the most sought after because an asshole like you is buying them all up.
Well, no.
It's not popularity.
A lot of people did want her.
I understand that, but there's not going to be more of those sold than Mario's. That's my point. It's like the mainstream characters are the most popular, not Rosalina.
Yeah. So
I do not want our fans to be happy. It just crushes me. Nintendo from the good days went to the shit for character design.
When they all look like the same character designs. I mean, Nintendo princesses have the exact same. They are so similar in design to each other that it's basically Disney princesses. Like, they share certain traits.
So, he doesn't have a problem with regular Samus, but Zero Suit Samus, because she's obviously...
Because she's skimpy?
I guess it's because she looks sexual. Yeah, he doesn't like sexualized female characters, maybe. Or I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, but he's a fucking prick. And I hope he trips down the stairs.
Is that how we're going to end? We wish bodily harm on somebody?
So.
We had fisting with ketchup, and now we have guy tripping down the stairs.
It's just how I feel. It's just how I feel right now. But I am pretty happy about the new 3DS XL coming out on February 13th. Why? Because I'll just say it, I'm a shameless whore for Nintendo handhelds. I will buy pretty much any new Nintendo handheld they release. All the revisions, I like them.
You want to remind people what the difference is between this and the regular?
Yeah, so it's going to have a better processor. It has two additional shoulder buttons. It has a better 3D viewing system.
Better thumbstick.
And a C-stick. But the 3D viewing system is interesting in that the sweet spot has been made bigger. I guess somehow, I don't know if it's with the gyro or what, but something in there, I don't know the tech, has made it so that you can tilt or move around a lot more and still see the crystal clear 3D.
I put my 3D on barely, I can notice it. I don't even use it, honestly.
Some games, like Kirby Triple Deluxe, look great. No, you don't, but they just look fantastic. Okay. Other games, like, I'll flick the Switch up and down, you know, just to see it in new spots. It doesn't matter so much to me. But, you know, the faster processor is cool, and
MicroSD support's pretty cool.
MicroSD, cool. It'll have support for the Amiibos built in, so it'll have NFC support.
Mm-hmm.
So, all in all, I'm looking forward to it, and because I planned on buying the XL one, I'm happy. People, though, there's been a bit of outrage, and I from some angles, I really do understand it, and some angles, I think it's almost faux outrage about Nintendo not bringing over the smaller 3D, the smaller new 3DS. Now, on one hand, I understand. For instance, Vani loves her 3DS XL, but it's a pain for her to lug around. She liked the size of her small 3DS, so she could put it in like a little backpack. But at the same point in time, I understand people wanting it, but it's not like Nintendo did this arbitrarily.
No, but how hard would it have been to ship over? I mean, if they're selling in Japan, they'd sell here. I'm not saying they'd sell even a tenth of them, but don't make them unavailable. Don't have left
well,
people
import them.
So
what's the, here's the option. If Nintendo thinks that it's not going to sell well and they're going to lose money on it because they've seen that the 3DS XL it seems to be what people grab, then what do? Announce, okay, we're going to bring over a limited supply of these, and then just a bunch of fucking scalpers are going to buy them and run the prices through the roof.
There's got to be a happy medium here. What if you have smaller hands? What if you're like you buy it for your 10-year-old?
I'm not saying there's no reason for it to have it here.
You're saying business-wise, it doesn't make sense for them.
I'm saying business-wise, I'm sure they...
Were the sales that abysmal then everywhere else that they said we're not going to bother?
No, but I'm just saying that it was once they brought out the 3DS XL, I think they saw enough of their fan base transition to it to think that they wouldn't need to. I don't think this is malicious on Nintendo's part.
At the very least, they're not doing bullshit where they'd bring out the new 3DS first and then the XL 6 months later.
Right.
Or you, at least they're not doing, at least they're giving you the choice up front. I wish they did that with the 3DS originally, but you know they usually don't do that. Nintendo always likes to force you to buy at least two of the right. same freaking handhelds. That goes back to, obviously, the original Game Boy.
So,
yeah. So you're going to get one. Are you going to do the GameStop trade-in?
Well, we could talk about that. I'm kind of interested in the Monster Hunter 4 one, which probably will not sell out like the Majora's Mask one did. The Monster Hunter 4 3DS XL, because I like Monster Hunter, and it comes pre-pack. The problem with doing trade-ins, now, GameStop is offering $75 for a 3DS and $100 for a 3DS XL, which would make the new 3DS XL $100 or $125. The problem is if you trade in your system to get another system, you can't do the system transfer. You can't do your data transfer.
Okay.
You run the risk of losing all of your saves and all of your games. Now, some GameStops are cool enough to let you do your system transfer there. If they have Wi-Fi and it's not a busy enough place. For instance, if I went and visited my buddy behind enemy lines, he would totally let me just do the transfer there and
enemy lines.
Be off with it. But you know, that's my problem with these trade-in bonuses towards systems is so much is locked to each system and they only let you transfer it once and you know, or you have to transfer it to get that stuff back. So is it really worth saving $100 to lose all your progress and have to rebuy shit? I don't know.
Is that what it is? So they gave you $100 trade-in?
$100 trading.
That's not bad.
It's not. I don't like to give GameStop any credit, but
it's not bad. It's not like only $50, because at $100, if you try to sell probably yourself on eBay, you're probably not going to get a huge amount more than that once this is out. You probably get like $130, $140.
So like, I am looking to possibly do the trade in all earnestness. It would just, I'd have to call up my friend and be like, hey, what day are you in? I'm coming in, and I'm going to, you know, can I do my transfer there using you guys' Wi-Fi? I will pay the extra money and then just, you know, give away. Because that's what I've done in previous times where that sort of thing has come up. I've just given away the 3DSs. You know, I've just been like, well, fine, fuck it, you need one here.
You have interest in that Majora's Mask limited edition?
I don't, but I have a lot of friends who are, and God, the scalping with the Majora's Mask limited edition game with the statue.
So that started, it's right now we're recording this on the 14th.
Right.
So this is the first day they're available?
No, or is it yesterday? No, no, no. I'm talking about, I'm saying it started with the Majora's Mask 3DS limited edition game.
Oh, with a figure.
And that's already being scalped to high heaven.
Okay.
Today they started pre-orders for the system. 3DS XL, new 3DS XL system.
Which is gold. It has a cool design on it.
And I think it has the game pre-installed.
Which makes sense.
As of like noon our time, GameStop was already not taking pre-orders.
You had to go in person or online?
No, they just weren't.
Or they
just weren't. Oh. They were done. They were done. They had finished it. A lot of online places aren't or stopped. And there's already people online trying to flip these fuckers for $1,500, $2,000.
I don't understand it.
I mean, you throw in shit like I said, the figurine combo, the you know PlayStation 20th anniversary system, the scalping of video games. Shit, it's just getting out of control.
Here's the problem with something like this, though, and this is how this is not capitalism.
Oh, I know.
Because capitalism entails some sort of risk. I guarantee you, a lot of these people putting up these big buy it nows, they don't have them in hand. And some of them may not even get them. So if they hit that $1,500 buy now, oh yeah, they're gonna the seller's gonna find a way to get them. But if they can't, they'll just cancel the sale.
Right? Because I'm not certain on this because
people do that all the time. People will pre sell stuff without it being in hand, hoping that they get it.
Well, and that's what I'm curious about here. A lot of places were making people put down the full amount to pre-order the system to try to prevent the scalping, but I would almost guarantee you that you could still go in and cancel that pre-order if you wanted to.
People are trying to sell the pre-order now. So I guess they've got the pre-order. So they're trying to sell it for $380. So they're trying to do double what the cost is, $415. So I guess some people realize that these may not be as limited as you think. But that's the problem. It's just that most of the, I'd say a good chunk of these are going to be scalpers trying to get them all.
Yeah, you know, it always is. I mean,
especially in the first day, because most here's the thing. People are crazy about their games, but is everyone crazy enough to go out the first day and get it? Probably not.
No, this is totally scalper bullshit.
It's scalpy. It's very scalpy.
I had two friends who wanted one, and they both were able to get it, but I just feel bad for anyone who can't, because there's no way they're selling out in one day just from gamers.
There are, if I'm just doing an eBay search, this is the first day. 100 pages. There are 628 for sale right now. 628 trying to be scalped within 24 hours of these being available.
That's gross for a number of reasons, and it says a lot of things. One, it says that they're not going to be as hard to come by,
no,
hopefully, as they're making it seem now. But two, it just shows how gross humanity is.
We have
628 that were, and this is just eBay.
I hope this is like the Wii U, and that they're going to be more widely available than people think.
Yeah,
and that they'd be stuck with them.
Yeah, or they come out and say, hey, we've got another batch of pre-orders open next week, because they did that with the Majora's Mask figurine bundle, mm-hmm, and it sold out immediately again, but they did do a second run of it, so maybe
can keep doing those.
So it is possible that they could say, okay, we've got, you know, go to your local store, whatever, we've got more of the Majora's Mask 3DSs.
And that's the only way for Nintendo to counter us, if they care at all, is to just keep pumping them out.
Well,
that's it.
I kind of wonder how much Nintendo cares. I mean, I like Nintendo, but Nintendo has been probably the biggest offender of limited edition crap in the past 2-3 months, even. We've just seen all this shit from... I mean, it really started with them being like, well, we're not discontinuing Amiibos. We are discontinuing Amiibos.
We'll talk about that a bit later for the Q&A.
Yeah, but I mean, anyway.
So, the 3D XL is coming out. New 3DS XL.
Oh, the last thing that
last thing you want to talk about, the charger?
Yeah, and this has got people up in arms, and I understand it, because it's useless without it. The new Nintendo 3DS XL is not going to come with a charger. On one hand, I am in that lucky enough pile where I have so many of these wall warts, it's not going to bother me at all. I have chargers for this for days. But for anyone who this is the first system, they're instantly going to be hit with like a $15, $20.
I think it's going to be $15, or I'd say be $15 or $20. Because you can buy them right now, Best Buy, for $14.99.
Yeah, if it's just a 3DS charger.
It's shitty. It is shitty. I think it sets a bad precedent for future handhelds or devices. They're assuming you have one of the earlier ones, and some people will have it, not everyone. I just think it's really shitty for them to do that. They're not saving that much money.
No.
These don't cost them anything.
And it's similar to, I mean, I think the precedent was actually set further back. It all started as soon as companies stopped packing everything you needed in the box to be good to go. Like, when Sony stopped including memory cards in their PlayStations. If you're not including a memory card, if you're not including it, I mean, you can't do anything without a memory card. You can't do anything without a wall charger. When you're not including things in the box that are required for play.
Now, I know you can buy these. You can buy, like, the third-party ones for probably only $250 each.
Sure.
If you buy them overseas, you have to wait. Somehow, you can buy it for $250 ships or $3. That's fine, but most people will just dish out the $15, and Nintendo wins that way. Nintendo, just throw in... It costs you probably 50 cents to throw these things in.
Yeah.
Just do it. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. That's all.
No, it is a stupid thing for them to do.
So... Along with Nintendo Direct coming out with news about the new 3DS XL, the other, at least to me, the biggest news was about, I'm not shocked by this, but it's disappointing in a way, I'll get into it, was about Wii games are going to start being sold on the eShop. They'll be sold for $20, and I think for the first week they'll have a promotion that they're half price for $10. It's just disappointing that we are now in sort of the realm where we can't even do backwards compatibility, or at least be happy with it. These companies be happy with it for even the prior generation. I had no problem with them saying we're going to sell GameCube games. That's fine. It's two generations ago. Maybe GameCubes are harder to find. I just wish they'd be content. Nintendo, maybe that's naive. It's a business. They'd be content with letting, you know, the prior generation hardware and software be there, because you can play Wii games in a Wii U.
So
I don't understand why this big push, especially since for a lot of these games you'll be able to find the physical copy for the same amount of price or cheaper. So it's not like they're charging. If they were coming out and saying we're going to charge, you know, say, because you can still buy obviously Wii games new in the store. You can find a lot of these, like Mario Galaxy 2. You can buy fine. So why charge, unless you come out and say we're going to charge you way below the retail? Otherwise, I don't like it.
My larger problem. I mean, first of all, like you said, yes, there is backwards compatibility already on the system. Two, I wish a little bit more effort had been put in. The gamepad has motion controls. It has all the buttons and joysticks necessary to emulate a Wii Remote and nunchuck hookup. And I know some games do rely on like a shake of the nunchuck or a shake of the remote, but I just wish they had found a way. I feel like I'd be more interested if it meant it felt like more of a cohesive part of the system, where I could just sit down and be like, I want to play Mario Galaxy, click it, and I'm playing it with the gamepad. You know, whereas I don't have to, you know, grab the Wiimote and the nunchuck and play it that way. I realize that there are going to be some games that are going to require both. I don't know. It's like when Microsoft started doing their titles on demand, and they were just charging outrageous prices. All this is preying on is the lazy.
Yes, I was going to say, who's going to be buying this? People that, I'll just spend money on this without realizing they can buy the physical copy. So this is what my problem is. This, I mean, Galaxy 2 is more than $20. Yes, that's going to be more than $20. But the original Mario Galaxy is $20 new still. You can find that probably in any store.
Yeah, 17, 8, 15 used.
So Nintendo, you might as well drop the price at least $15 or $10. Don't charge $20 for it. That just seems like bad business to me.
If everyone else wasn't doing it worse, I would agree. But at this point, I think Nintendo's just following suit, and I can't get super mad at Nintendo for doing it. But I don't see this being a service that I'm going to take advantage of very often, if ever. You know, unless it's just something that was really, really hard to get, you know, and I don't want to, you know, and where the value actually suddenly becomes worthwhile. You know, if they put Xenoblade Chronicles on there or something like that.
I don't think I'll ever be in a position where I will buy a game within the last generation or current generation unless it was a significant value saver to go digital versus buying the physical property, just for many reasons.
Right.
Just because, you know, it's attached to that system. If something happens to that system, or you want to sell it, it's gone. It's, you know, things like that. You know, or if it's a game that we always talk about, we don't talk about it enough, but a game that requires a server to be on somewhere, and then 10 years from now that server is gone. We don't know what's going to happen to the, you know, PS3 and PS4 games.
That's really
10 years from now.
That's starting to pile up too. Like, we have games that we have a pile of games at work with a note on it that says "Do not buy servers down." And it's like, it's a pile of like PS3 and I think some 360 games that, you know, we are just never to take in again because they're dead. They're useless games.
They're
like,
lost games, basically.
Games like, you know, well, they're probably not really that big of a deal, but games like MAG or SOCOM Confrontation, you know, like, you literally can't do anything with them.
You can put them on, but you can't play them.
They are a dead Blu-ray. They are just a Blu-ray that does nothing anymore.
And we're talking games that are less than 10 years old.
We're talking games that are less than 5, I think, for most of those.
They just said, screw it. No, we don't think anyone's playing them anymore. So,
yeah, I think MAG came out when one of our last employees was working, and that was no more than 3-4 years ago.
So, yeah, once again, the biggest problem, I don't have a problem with buying games on your system or eShop, but just the price point, give value. Don't say, well, $10 for the first... No, have it always be $10. You'll sell a hell of a lot more than have them at $20. And then, hey, Nintendo, it's not costing you a damn thing to produce those. So just lower the price just a little bit. Help us out here. More Nintendo news. This is a very Nintendo-heavy podcast.
This comes from Sega Country.
This comes from Sega Country?
It does.
We're going to get into politics and economics a little bit. But the news that's come out, Nintendo officially announced, is that they are done selling products in Brazil due to high tariffs and taxes. Now, if you don't know what tariffs are import taxes.
Right.
So what happens is a country, for whatever reason, you can say it's antiquated, but most countries have done this in the past. It's a way to make sure your economy can fairly compete, in theory, against importing. So say for example, you import TVs from another country, but you produce TVs yourself, but the TVs you produce in your own country cost more for whatever reason. So to be able to fairly compete, you put a tariff on products coming in that on these companies, forcing them to raise the price so that the price more matches what your economy is producing. It's very... countries still do this, but not for mainstream products, especially video games,
right,
for the most part. Now, I did read that Brazil did try to do this. They did this to Apple, forcing Apple to set up some sort of shop in Brazil so they wouldn't cost a huge amount of money.
Microsoft actually set up shop in Brazil so they could manufacture Xbox Ones.
So what you're looking at is this. So the Wii U, when it launched in Brazil, cost $830 US. So that's more than double what it costs in the U.S. That's due to tariffs and taxes that Nintendo had to pay, and they had to make up the cost there. That's a huge tax pay.
And the thing is, much like you said with tariffs and their original purpose, what is Nintendo competing against that Brazil's making?
Yeah, for example, the games then had to be marked up to $87 U.S. versus probably $50 or $60. That's like a 50% increase. That's a lot of taxes Nintendo's paying. And I hate to say it, a lot of this sounds a little bit like a little corruption. They probably wanted a payout from Nintendo to sort of, you know, maybe they wanted Nintendo to grease the wheels a little bit in order to get their product in there. And Nintendo probably said, we're not playing ball. Fuck you. We're going to leave.
Right. Well, you know, so what they've said is, they mentioned Nintendo could bypass this by setting up a plant in Brazil to build. Right. Well,
why would they? That's the thing, though.
Microsoft did, and now Microsoft has a stronghold in Brazil. I mean, but it's whether or
it's
not...
It's a huge investment, though.
But it is. I'm not saying it's small, and I'm not saying that Microsoft is necessarily smart to do it to tackle one region, but Microsoft did it for Xbox One, and the Xbox Ones are like $200 to $300 cheaper than an imported tariffed PS4. It seems to be a problem with large parts of Latin America with games, though. Working in the store that I do on the border, you know, between the U.S. and Mexico, we get a lot of Mexicans who come up and buy games from us because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Because what people do is, Nintendo's not gone in Brazil. What's going to replace this is the gray market.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of secondary sellers come in and
right.
get the product imported themselves
and
mark it up themselves.
They'll too. Mark it up. They'll probably
middlemen.
Yeah.
Middlemen. Right. Where they shouldn't have to exist.
Right. And maybe they'll be a little bit cheaper. Maybe they won't. You see a lot of that in Mexican game stores as well, where, you know, a game that sells for $40 here is selling for $65 or $70 brand new there. When people from Brazil used to come up to... So we live in Ocean Beach, which is it's a very nice beach town. It's homey. A lot of people vacation here. A lot of young kids will come up here and spend their summers, usually from Ireland or Brazil. And when the Brazilians come up to Ocean Beach, they buy out the fucking store. They will buy every video game system they ever could possibly want because they are saving. They tell me literally hundreds, depending on the one guy who bought like Genesis systems for all of his friends and bought like PS3s and stuff like that. He was saving thousands of dollars on taxes by buying these. So I feel bad, but you know, I think people have it backwards. You see a lot of people who are angry at Nintendo for pulling out of Brazil. This is not Nintendo's fault or problem. This is an antiquated and bad use of a tariff system to make all of their products more expensive.
No, unless you're producing the product yourself, the same product in your own country with your own local economy, a tariff at least makes theoretical sense. Here, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. There's no native Brazilian...
Nintendo. Basically.
Yeah.
So, again, they're looking for a huge amount of money. Nintendo was probably saying, we're going to spend all our time to get our product, pay these tariffs... And no one's going to buy our product. No one's going to spend $850 on a Wii U. It's not going to make any sense. So why should we put in the time and effort to do the distribution and pay these taxes, and we're not going to sell the products? It makes perfect business sense. They can't, again, they're not going to go to Brazil and make Wii U's there and set up infrastructure, which could take years to properly do. And again, paying off people maybe in Brazil. Brazil is a country that has corruption in the government. So... It doesn't make any sense for them to do that. It just doesn't. Well, and it's not like you say, well, it's Apple. Apple has a hell of a lot more money. Microsoft has a hell of a lot more money that they can take a chance and get that immediate money back. Well, Nintendo, that may not happen.
Right, because they sell 3DS. They're a video game company that sells games and game devices. Hmm. And it's also why we laugh when people say Nintendo is going to die or go under. They're not, because Nintendo doesn't make stupid business decisions. Nintendo is not going to dump money into a facility.
Yes, here. And plus, people forget the markup. Nintendo's not making that much money on their Wii U systems.
Well, they make money on their Wii U systems, which is more than most.
But
most
it's not
companies.
Like the margin that Apple's making on their iPhones.
No, absolutely.
You know
not.
What I mean? So if Apple, if it makes sense for a company like Apple to set up shop, because if it's going to cost them a little bit more money to produce those phones there versus the child labor, sweatshops over in Asia, if they're selling them for $400, $500. And they only cost them, $30 each to produce, versus Nintendo maybe costing them $325 per console and they're only making $75. I'm just throwing that out there. That's a huge difference in what you're selling and what you're doing.
Well, and on the global market, Apple sells globally, tons of these things. Nintendo is, and this is not meant to be an insult, but it's like I said, Nintendo is small potatoes compared to Apple. Nintendo is still, by and large, a toy company.
Yeah, and then plus, again, Apple's making that money back, and also an app. They're getting a percentage of all the apps and the sales. Nintendo has to sell the software, too, and that's going to get tariffed, too, unless it doesn't make sense. It's unfortunate for everyone. It's unfortunate for Nintendo, and it's unfortunate for the people at Brazil that want to get Nintendo products.
I'm fucking surprised Nintendo or Sony even try. I know, and I understand why Microsoft does now, but I'm really surprised that Nintendo, like Sony, or they even went in under any of those conditions.
They tried, and they figured, well, after the first year, they're like, we're not making money. Why are we bothering?
Right.
We're not going to play your game. All right. On a more personal YouTube note, just a little, I've been on YouTube now since June 2008, so it's been, it's coming up on 7 years. And I finally had a video removed from YouTube. I had a video flagged. It was my good old 2011 Alicia Dragoon video. And it wasn't removed because it had nudity in it. I found out, because there is no nudity in Alicia Dragoon video. Nothing questionable, nothing that shouldn't be on YouTube. This has happened to James's videos in the past, Cinemassacre, where they managed to take down the account for a day by just false flagging videos. It was flagged for spam, scam, or deceptive commercial content, I found out. And there's nothing deceptive about it. There was nothing deceptive. The thumbnail is the beautiful Julia Fair, who was in the video prominently. So I got it restored. It was just annoying because people don't realize is when a video gets taken down, you get a strike on your account, and then that can hurt your account. Three strikes, you're out within a certain amount of time, and you have different abilities are less and less. But you can see Julia, you can see my Sega Genesis review, my first Sega Genesis review. Ian doesn't care, but for me, it's a big deal. It affects you too, Ian. It can affect us getting the podcast out on YouTube. Speaking of YouTube, that's how you segue.
You went for the lowest common denominator on that one.
I think it was a medium denominator. Microsoft laid out rules officially, rules for monetization of Let's Play videos. And I'm glad they did it. To Microsoft's credit, it's pretty fair. So, if you don't know what a Let's Play video is, doesn't have to be any sort of commentary, but it's taking gameplay footage, you upload it as your own content. It is a legal gray area. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It is not original content. It is content. It's akin to someone uploading, to me, a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You're uploading someone's commercial content yourself. Most video game companies don't care and let it go. Nintendo they came out with a policy, I think it was a year ago, where they were doing almost like a certain YouTubers, or you had to do an agreement with them where some people can get away with it totally, some were splitting the ad revenue. That's their right, because again, a Let's Play doesn't really fall under fair use. At least to me, it doesn't. People will give me shit for it. I don't think it does. But most people get away with it anyway. Most people, there's huge shows on YouTube that are just Let's Plays. The biggest YouTuber is a Let's Player, PewDiePie. So again, most companies don't care. But Microsoft won't officially lay down rules, which is a good idea. So what they said was, it has to be captured during normal gameplay. I think that's good. So they don't want you to Without the use of reverse engineering or hacking. Good, they don't want to promote hacking the system. That's perfectly fine. Microsoft's rules additionally prohibit the use of gameplay footage to produce content that is pornographic, lewd, obscene, vulgar, discriminatory, or otherwise objectionable. So what they want, they don't want people to use their content to put out videos where it's just, well, look at me curse out people while I'm playing Call of Duty and upload it, and it's just funny, ha ha ha, what you see, or people troll. I've seen some are actually funny, or they troll, they attack their own teammates in a first-person shooter and get called various racial and sexual epithets, you know. And Microsoft wants to say, hey, if you upload that, that's fine, but you're not going to be able to make money off of that. This is where we're going to draw the line. And that's what Microsoft is doing. And they even said, whether an item is objectionable is up to us.
But you can, at least they're upfront about that.
But you can expect us to be concerned if a significant number of people in the games community or the public at large report the content as offensive. So this, to me, just seems like them covering their ass in case they have to come down on a YouTube video. Say one comes out there that's really, to them, just this paints us in a bad light. We're not going to at least let you make money off of it.
Yeah.
They're not saying they're going to strike it from the internet, but you're not going to make money off of something that we think is bullshit. I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, and more companies need to do it. I mean, Nintendo really needs to come out with a concrete set of rules for what they think is
acceptable,
because they can't make up their goddamn minds.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo's even flagged some of my videos for just use of, I think a few of my early Flea Markets Madness videos, I use like music from like Super Mario 2 in the background for like 45 seconds, and so I can't monetize those videos because of that. You can say that's not fair use technically, but it's like Nintendo is really stringent about going after that sort of stuff. They were the first one to really do that.
Couldn't you just re-upload the video
without it? Oh, yeah, I could do that. But then you lose all the comments and, you know.
The comments are bullshit.
Why do you care? Why is it all about the money? Why can't it be about you have fun doing it? Well, that too.
So if anyone wants to see me definitely cry this year, if anyone wants to definitely see tears rolling down my face as I try to hold back the sobs, it's going to be when Macho Man Randy Savage gets put into the WWE Hall of Fame. Shut up. It's about goddamn time he gets put into the fucking Hall of Fame. The fact that he's getting put into the Hall of Fame on as First Ballot 2015 is still fucking insulting to me. First Ballot 2015? Eat my dick.
Well, there are no first or second ballots. It's just you're in.
Well, they say he's the first entry. It doesn't mean anything, but that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
I am beyond happy that he is finally getting...
Ooh, yeah.
Put in. We're not going to talk. I'm going to try not to talk too long about it because we did a lot of wrestling. But the man was probably, in my opinion, the greatest wrestler, at least of his generation, if not, and certainly one of the greatest of all time. His ring skills, while not as flashy as what we have today, were the inspiration to tons of wrestlers to be the types of wrestlers that they are today. The man had proportionally low number of championships for his high level of what's the word I'm looking for the high level of
popularity.
His popularity and the inspiration he gave to future wrestlers.
Two WWF,
four WCW,
four,
one IC.
That's it.
That's all he had.
He had four WCW? Really? Well, I remember the one when he was in NWO.
So the thing is his...
Wow.
His WCW run wasn't really great. And it's not necessarily Randy Savage's fault. That was after he had some serious neck surgery.
Yeah, he was retired from WWE.
Yeah. He retired from WWE, got called... Ted Turner called him. He was like, okay, let's make more money. But he had neck surgery. He couldn't move like he used to. And the booking was awful around that time anyways. But all of his stuff in the WWF was fantastic. He's being inducted. This is where I get really kind of pissy, is in two spots. They interviewed his brother, Leaping Lanny Poffo.
Who was also the genius.
And in the two podcasts, he paints a different story. On the one, he actually says, it was always Randy's dream to have the Poffo family inducted into the Hall of Fame at the same time. In the other, and that's why he held on for so long. In the complete other podcast he did days later, he basically apologized to his brother up in heaven and said, "I hope you don't hold it against me. I learned to let go." So whatever the case may be, he's getting in there. What bothers me more is that Hulk Hogan is doing his induction. And that, I don't want to get too angry.
They did not. They had a lot of animosity in real life between Hogan and...
And they say that they patched it. Hogan likes to say that they patched it up. But
the same way he patched up with the Warrior, but that was more like we probably hugged it out for a minute and then talked for 10 minutes. Now was it? You know what I mean? That's not, that doesn't mean you're friends.
But a lot of people say that up until the end, Randy's animosity towards Hogan and Hogan's towards Randy was pretty high. And I don't know that Hogan really deserves any animosity towards Macho Man, because Macho Man helped push him through very important times. You have to understand that these guys wrestled together. I mean, wrestled against each other over 100 matches. Mm-hmm. How many of them did Randy Savage win? Zero.
Yeah.
Macho Man Randy Savage beat Hulk Hogan zero times.
Macho Man helped give Hogan this sort of second resurgence in the late 80s.
Yeah, with the Mega Powers.
With the Mega Powers. I always confuse which WrestleMania was which. I believe he won the championship at WrestleMania 4. Was it 4?
It's and then, 4, and then they exploded then 5.
Then he turned heel throughout the year. Macho Man, and then Hogan won it from him at WrestleMania 5. So that was a really awesome angle, just because of the slow burn that they don't do anymore.
Nope.
It took a full year to do it, where, you know, you had the face turn slowly, I mean, or heel turn very slowly, jealousy over Miss Elizabeth, and that really helped Hogan. It rounded his character out more and it helped refresh him, because by that point, Hogan had been the top of the company since 83. That was, what was that, 5 years? So already, usually, once you get to 5 years, people want something else, something new.
Yeah.
And it should have been Savage, and he was huge because he won the championship at WrestleMania 4. But then it went back to Hogan. And then Savage never really got up to that height anymore. Then he won it the second time against, what, Flair?
Flair. He won it against Flair, and then he held it until he lost it to Warrior. And then he didn't really retire right after that. He appeared one more... I mean, he went back to Miss Elizabeth, went face, appeared one more time as Macho Man, not Macho King, so he could leave WWF as Macho Man, and then that was the end of it.
He lost the title to Warrior? I thought he only won the title once, Warrior.
He lost the title...
He lost his career match.
Yeah, that was a career
match. At WrestleMania 7.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah, which was a good match. Very good match. Especially Warrior's best match, probably.
I go back and forth on it. It's an interesting mix of... And we've talked about it before, but it's an interesting mix of Savage's meticulously planned out style and Warrior's comic book persona. I've said it before, I hate the fact that he no-sells the elbow drop 5 times, but it's a good match.
No, he sold it. He didn't get up. He just kicked out. He didn't no-sell him. He was down on the mat for like 3 minutes.
He no-sold 5 of them.
No, he didn't. He sold them. He just kicked out.
He kicked out. That's still, to me, no-selling a finisher.
No, he no-sold the pedigree. At WrestleMania 12, right. That was no selling. Before the fans kill you.
I know what no selling is.
Okay.
You can use it in a couple different contexts.
It didn't finish him off.
Yeah.
But the thing about Savage, why he was so good, is that he switched back from face to heel like twice in WWE. He went back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, love the interviews. The 360.
Yeah.
The thing about Savage, people understand, I shed a tear when he died. I did.
I always say it, when Twitter goes crazy with celebrity deaths, there's only been two that have greatly affected me. Maybe three. One was Hunter S. Thompson. The other one was Philip Seymour Hoffman. But the one that I actually shed tears was Macho Man Randy Savage. Not going to lie about it. I cried when the man died.
I miss when Hunter Thompson died. He died? He died in 2005.
Yeah, he killed himself.
Oh. Okay.
I was okay with his choice.
You okay with his choice?
If you read a lot of Hunter S. Thompson, you realize that's probably how it was going to go.
The thing about Savage, though, is, especially for the Hulkamania era, he was the second most well-known, most popular wrestler before Warrior. that 1 or 2 years where Warrior was huge, he was the most well-known wrestler.
Yeah.
Like he was on talk shows, and WWE did a great induction video which showed he was on Arsenio Hall. He was always funny, always well-educated, always answered the questions correctly. Now, of course, when it came to stuff like the steroids, he had to say, no, I haven't done it. Of course, later he admitted he did because everyone did.
Yeah.
But he had to say it because he saw himself as a role model for the kids, so he couldn't say that he did steroids back when everyone else was doing it. You know, and then of course there was always the rumors about him and Stephanie McMahon when she could have been young and something might have happened. There's always been this really weird sort of rumors about that.
Those seem to have vaporized in recent years, but I don't know.
You can't say, but people say that maybe that they had an inappropriate relationship when she was still like a teenager. Who knows? That could have been the reason why he didn't come back, but he did come back. He did come back. He came back for a year ago. It was a year and a half ago. Or was it already 2 years when he came back to the studios to do the promotion for the WWE, that WWE game on the new systems.
Yeah.
So then you thought, oh, well, he's gonna be back again. Then he's dead. Unfortunately, that was 2 years ago. He's already been dead. That's right.
Yeah.
So
2011, I think is when he died, actually.
Was it really? It's been that long?
I think he had a heart attack in 2011, September, something like that. The other thing that was interesting for
May 2011.
Okay.
So it's been...
Wow, I was close.
4 years almost. Holy crap.
The one thing I'll say... The last thing I'll say about Savage that I think really meant that he was something special, at least for me, was... even as a kid, you know, when you always loved the faces, I loved Savage, whether he was heel or face. It didn't matter.
Macho King? You like the Macho King?
Yeah. I was a Macho Man Randy Savage fan. Whether good or bad, I didn't give a shit. You know, it was just, that was the guy.
You loved the character.
Yeah.
He was obviously very intelligent. His promos were the best at the time. You can go on, people, if you don't like pro wrestling, I know some of our audience doesn't, go just on YouTube and put in Macho Man promo.
Yeah.
And they'll have like a 10-minute string of his crazy but hysterical promos.
Most of which he did off the top of his head.
Yes.
Yeah, almost all of them he did
a lot of times playing off the brilliant Mean Gene Okerlund.
Oh,
who played his straight man part perfectly.
Him and Mean Gene were the best promo couple.
Yes, they were just good because Mean Gene always had to be like, "Oh, I can't believe!" Like, you know, they both played their parts well. Again, when Macho Man died, it was all over the news, ESPN. He touched people's lives. People don't realize it. Like, yeah, we take Hogan out of the equation, and it was Macho Man. He was the guy people remember from that era. And that's why it's surprised that it took until now for him to get in the Hall of Fame.
When you Google stuff about wrestlers, you normally don't see it on real sports websites. When I went to go Google, you know, him being inducted into the Hall of Fame, it was on real sports websites. Like, he is one of those guys that is considered, you know, one of those very athletic. He was taken very seriously, mm-hmm. you know, because he took his craft seriously. Yeah. Real sports websites or real sports news yeah. took him seriously.
Obviously, great psychology in his matches. The WrestleMania 3 Steamboat match stole the show.
So good.
And it's regarded one of the best matches of all time. And when you look at it now, you might say, oh, what's the big deal? Before that match, there weren't matches like that.
Right.
That's what, when you watch that match, realize that. There weren't matches with that sort of pace, that sort of storytelling, that well done like that. That's why that match is so important.
I'm fairly certain when we got the WWE Network, I think that was the very first match I showed Vonnie. And In my head, I'm like, I'm taking a big risk doing this. But she was like, oh, that was pretty cool. I'm like, sweet.
She got it.
Yeah.
She got the storyline.
Yeah, right, exactly. She understood
the interference
all that.
Stuff. She understood it.
Yep.
The story with the neck,
mm-hmm.
everything. So we're happy to see that, even though the WWE product in the past year has not been good, that's at least a positive. On to the Q&A. And before we get to the Q&A, I'll just say E and I had some trouble, and we'd love all your suggestions, but sometimes we struggle to find ones that are interesting to us just because it's hard to make a good conversation out of asking what's your favorite sort of questions or top list. It just makes it a little bit difficult. And I'm just going to say, try to go out there. When you're thinking of topics to suggest, just think of something that we can have a nice conversation about, a lot of give and take, something with maybe a little more depth. And also, if you submit the same question week after week after week and we do not answer it, that probably means that we either don't want to answer because we don't think it's interesting, or we don't think it's going to we're not gonna have a good conversation about it. So just please, we appreciate it, but just don't submit the same question over and over again. And give it up after the third time. Even give it three shots. If we don't answer, then we're probably not going to.
And it's not to be a dick, but a lot of the stuff that we're bypassing isn't because we don't like you or the question doesn't have, you know, some sort of maybe interesting merit, like in a different situation. But questions that can be answered with like yes, no's, maybes are just things that we're not going to do because they're too quick. There's yeah. no conversation.
Yeah, no one's going to want to hear us say a question and say yes or no, or say, well, what's your favorite game? And I just say Danny Sullivan's Indy Heat. It's not interesting.
Ian, do you like peanuts?
Well, the game is interesting, but I mean, the answer is not.
Yes, dry roasted. I mean, you know, whatever.
Okay, first question. At Jester of Roanoke. Is that Roanoke, Virginia?
Roanoke, yeah.
Do you think scalping of Nintendo product, not just Amiibos, has taken a steep upturn lately?
I do.
Yeah, it's every month you see it now with a quote-unquote limited Nintendo product.
Yeah,
goes back to what, that the New York City Zelda exclusive with the...
Well, I mean, there's always been Nintendo exclusives, but it just seems like they're... especially with the Amiibos and the fact that, you know, now we know that, you know, certain ones are always going to be hyper-limited. With the limited edition systems for games that are ridiculously popular, yes, we have seen a huge upturn in the scalping of Nintendo products. I don't think it's just Nintendo, though. I think scalping of video game stuff, or at least speculating and sitting on video game stuff, is hitting a huge upturn, too. People buying two copies of a game, one to open and play and one to hold on to, just in case. You know, it's stupid. It's largely the scalper's fault. I mean, it's hard to say without the scalper's influence what these supply situations would be like, but I am not going to let Nintendo get off the hook on this either.
No, I'm not.
I'm not. They know they can fix this by putting out more. You can argue that they're being conservative, but I feel like they're just feeding into this.
I think, at least for the Amiibo, because the Amiibo is, I mean, not expensive to produce in the bulk they're producing it, is that they should sell them until they stop selling, or at least produce them until they stop selling.
Sure.
For every single one. Because obviously, they're putting out tons of Marios and tons of Links, you know, and why not just put out a little bit more, you know, of those Rosalinas until they're not selling anymore? Because obviously, they're not going to sell all the Marios, so why not sell? I know it's all with the shelf space, I understand that, but put out even a few in each box. Like I said, about like with toys, just put a few in there.
Like I said, I think it still comes down to a web store that Nintendo runs where that, you order them.
Yeah, that would be the solution.
And then, I mean, then, you know, they do that. They monitor the supply and demand specifically themselves. You limit it to one per household. You buy them, and when they do seriously stop seeing the orders trickle in, then they can be like, okay, we're no longer producing this.
You know
this.
What? I'll give you two or three you can buy. Because even then, you're not going to be able to get 100 like that asshole did.
Right.
You know, and people will be able to still get them, or get them for their friends. They say, hey, you know, I'll order one for you, too. I want Rosalind as well.
Yeah, fair.
You know.
From Noah Klesinski at Nintendo Beer Guy. We'd probably get along. with the WWE WrestleMania pinball machine announcement from Stern, let's hear some pinball news. Well, unfortunately, pinball doesn't move very quickly, so there's not a lot of news, but this did get announced right after our last podcast, which was so wrestling-themed it would have been fitting. And Stern is putting out a pro and a limited edition model of the WrestleMania pinball machine. I think the machine looks fairly cool.
I have to see this. I have not seen this yet.
I think the machine looks fairly cool, setup-wise. I don't like the graphics.
Actually, the setup looks kind of like the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, it does.
Was it 91?
93, I think. But yeah.
The setup looks similar, except for a ring on the top.
So, you know, it's not a bad-looking machine, but it's covered in graphics of wrestlers I couldn't really give a shit about.
That's the problem with these games, with wrestling.
Yeah, and
it's a mix of real photos and art, which I hate when they mix.
Just do one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't have a lot of faith in Stern right now. Stern's last two good machines, in my opinion, really good machines, were Tron and the limited edition AC/DC, or now what they're calling the Lucy AC/DC, because you can buy the limited edition one at a cheaper price with a different back glass.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, so. I mean,
it looks like a very symmetrical machine.
Star Trek but like a lot of their other ones that have come out, like Metallica and Star Trek since, they're nice machines. They have fun shots, but the rules suck on them. They feel cheap as shit. They feel very, very cheaply made. And I need, it's just one of those things where I never would have guessed in a million years, really, that they would do another WWF pinball machine, WWE one. I mean, that's kind of out of nowhere for Stern. Stern usually does movie licenses and music.
Well, this one is, this is called Legends of WrestleMania. Maybe, I don't know, they're putting out different versions. So this one has, I'm looking at the sign. Jake the Snake, Legion of Doom, Paul Bearer, Ric Flair. Of course, Triple H has to have his fucking mug front and center because he's as big as Flair and Legion of Doom. And, you know, and yeah. then at top they have, this is appropriate though, the top of this one has Andre, The Rock, Hogan, Austin, Undertaker. That they all fit.
See, that's fine. And those are, like, and they're doing different back glasses. Like, I think the pro one is the one that's got Cena's mug front and center.
Of course. No one's going to want to buy that one, so they'll go for the limited
exactly.
edition one.
I really do want to get my hands on one. I'm not sure when they're rolling it out. I think they said 3 months. But so I will probably get a chance to play it at my local pinball spot if I'm lucky. If not, Stern always shows up with a machine. If they're proud of a machine, they show up with it at Comic-Con. So I'd be able to play it there.
From this picture I'm looking at, so it has the dot matrix display, but does it also have a little video screen underneath with Hogan on it?
I thought it...
It looks like they might be doing both.
Yeah, there might be a
both.
Little video screen.
It's like, from this picture, dot matrix, they always do Stern. They haven't gone total... LCD yet.
No.
But then underneath you have, I want to say from, it looks like about 6 inches big, 6 by probably 3. And it's Hogan tearing the shirt off. So it looks like you might be activating some little mini videos.
Or maybe like an entrance or something like that, which would be pretty cool.
So that's a nice little happy medium. I know, like, speaking of news, Big Lebowski seems to be coming along pretty well. There's been more released videos
right.
of that, even though it looks like it's not programmed yet fully. But with that, it's interesting because that's a fake dot matrix display. It's just a filter they put on
it,
which is cool.
Yeah.
Because then you can have probably a choice to take it on or off. That's a nice happy medium.
Well, exactly. The filter is pretty cool. That's the thoughts on that pinball machine. I just thought it was funny that last year they brought Metallica back to Comic-Con because Ford Mustang got just ripped apart.
Really?
Oh,
So Mustang came out last year
and no one liked it. So
well, it's kind of a weird sort of Mustang, really?
They didn't take it. They brought Metallica
again. I don't see how even when people want to buy it because of the theme, though. I mean, Harley Davidson, that's like a... That's one thing, but Ford
I'm
Mustang?
55 and I have a small penis, so I'm gonna buy the Ford Mustang pinball machine.
Maybe it was like a Steve McQueen sort of tie. That could be cool.
No, it was just straight up Mustang themed. Yeah, bad call.
But you know what? I like to see wrestling products, and I like the Royal Rumble machine. And if you like Macho Man, his voice is all over that Royal Rumble. It's Royal Rumble. So man's voice. Oh
it was pretty great.
It was just fun.
CLB Gamer, have you played any of the classic first-person shooters like Duke Nukem 3D, Doom Blood, or Shadow Warrior?
I cut my teeth on first-person shooters.
That's what I was going to say. They may not be my favorite genre now, but...
I still remember buying the Wolfenstein 3D shareware at the desk of CompUS, at the counter, where it was just in a little cardboard sleeve on the peg. I still remember that. And be like, wow, he's shooting a Nazi on there. I'm going to buy that and play that. Because my parents don't care about violence, so I'm going to buy and play that. And that was a complete... You didn't realize, but that was like only like what, supposed to be like a third of the game? That was a full game, though.
I remember
for $5, whatever it cost.
For whatever reason, first-person shooters always felt like the best bang for buck with shareware. You got a lot. I remember buying, getting Duke Nukem... Or not Duke Nukem. Wolfenstein 3D. And basically hiding it from my parents, because they were kind of weird about violence in games when I was a kid.
Okay.
It depended. So I installed it and buried it in folders and played it. And then my dad came home with Doom.
We got Doom. he kind of knew you wanted it.
Yeah, he's like, we got Doom. Doom 2 was the one that we actually bought in the big box. Yeah, and because he wanted it. And, I mean, we played the shit out of that. Duke 3D was one that I played a good deal of. It's the only good Duke Nukem 3D game that I can think of.
The original was excellent.
The side-scrollers are good, and the first 3D one was good. Blood, I did play. I didn't play a ton of it,
Blood.
But I really liked... Blood was interesting. kind of like horror movie themed, a little bit more violent.
Oh, that's right. That was the
yeah.
They had Blood and Blood too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Blood was the better one, and Blood was not actually that much gorier, but it was just it was very macabre.
I remember Rise of the Triad playing that.
That was fairly violent.
It was violent, but I remember it like being weird backgrounds and not like it wasn't like cohesive from what I remember.
It was a weird game. I mean, you could eat psilocybin mushrooms in that game and it would trip out the screen.
I loved, based on the Duke Nukem engine, Shadow Warrior.
Yeah, Shadow Warrior.
That was fun. Because stuff like the sticky bombs, you can use the katana for melee and slice people in half. That was fun multiplayer, I remember, because of the... Well, actually, Duke Nukem, the same thing, where you had like the shrink ray and you can step on the guy.
Yep.
And the jetpack was great. Now, remember, those games weren't actually 3D. Those were 2D games. You couldn't go over... you couldn't walk over bridges and things.
In Doom, you couldn't. In Duke, you could.
You could?
Yes.
Because levels
I used to make levels for these, and for Duke you could. I'm not sure how they did it, but for Duke there were bridges. You could have gaps and things.
You could do
there.
Okay.
Yes. Doom you couldn't. You couldn't. It was always you're always raising or lowering the tile size.
I always thought Quake was the first real 3D first person shooter.
Oh yeah, I mean, like I said, it's been ages since I made a Duke 3D level, but they at least faked it really well.
I remember Dark Forces faked. Dark Forces was not 3D. I remember it was not.
Sure.
Because when you looked at the map, it never crossed back over. You were always... It was turned away, then went there. It worked, though.
Right.
Dark Force... The original Dark Force is a really, really good game.
Yeah, it's fun.
People always say how the sequel was used to be one of the highest-rated PC games when it was out. Go play that first Dark Forces game. Before they put all the Jedi shit in it, I don't need a fucking lightsaber in every Star Wars game. Just give me... I'm a mercenary. I'm Kyle Katarn, and I'm kicking ass. I'm throwing freaking, you know, grenades and battling Gamorrean guards and... Boba Fett. Boba Fett's in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fun game. Shadow Warrior, Duke Nukem. The first time I bought non-shareware, I bought, Ultimate Doom, when they had Doom 1 and 2 in both packs?
I think Ultimate Doom is like everything, I think. It's all the WAD files. It was all the WAD files up to that. No, Ultimate Doom was different.
I thought Ultimate Doom was whatever they had a package. I remember they had Doom 1 and 2, I think, in the same box. Maybe I'm confusing it, but that's, I think, how I got Doom 2. Okay. No, I got Doom 2 because... kid in high school copied it onto disc for me. That's how. I did buy the Tips from the Doom Gurus pack, which was like literally you bought this huge like 500 page book, and they gave you like five or six different Doom level editors.
Yeah,
including one you can look at it. You can look at it in 3D. It was in 3D, but you can look at it in 3D and make your own WADs.
Yeah,
you can love.
I had do that.
And then you had Tips from the Doom Gurus.
I came
with the CD and the big book, mm-hmm. And then I remember downloading. The Alien versus Predator. Do you remember that one? The Alien versus Predator mod?
No, I remember the Aliens mod, which was really good. I don't remember the Alien versus Predator one.
The Alien versus Predator one, it wasn't the best layout, but it was like almost circular. You had tons of aliens, and you had predators that were invisible. And they made it so hard that you could not survive more than like 2 minutes. Like, you were just dead. But they put in sound effects from the movies, like Let's Rock and fucking A and stuff like that. And That was a lot of creativity. I'm sure a lot of programmers got their start as kids just playing, making their own, their own levels.
Yeah.
And loading them up from DOS. That's how you did it back then. Any other first-person shooters you remember from the 90s? What was that space one that was sort of based on the Wolfenstein engine? I always remember that.
Spear of Death? No. Spear of Destiny was the sequel.
That was the sequel of Wolfenstein. There was a space one where it was futuristic. I always remember it because there was always one enemy that when you shot him, his like leg would fall off when you killed him. And he would yell. Someone out there will know what I'm talking about.
But,
it was also shareware.
But I did play the hell out of Catacomb 3D, which I think might have been the first.
I don't remember that one.
First person shooter. It was old.
You ever play like Heretic?
Heretic? Heretic and Hexen were fucking phenomenal.
Did you play those? Yeah. I remember playing them a little bit, but I never finished them.
I loved them. Hexen was one of the first games I remember with like a sort of semi-open hub world where you had to like go do things elsewhere.
Really?
And yeah, it wasn't level-based. It was kind of hub-based.
I remember playing, probably my first online game experience in the mid-90s was playing Doom online.
Same.
And I remember it being, it wasn't bad for 56K modem. It wasn't terrible.
No, my buddies and I used to just direct dial each other and play one-on-one deathmatch in small maps.
And I was pretty good at it. I was always good at first-person shooters, but I was pretty good at that. And then never tried Wolfenstein. Did Wolfenstein have multiplayer? No, I don't think it did.
No. Not to my knowledge.
But there you go. That's our little 90s. But you know what the thing I like about Doom, though? And it was, it started that whole, the look of the game's changing, and...
it looks like Jurassic Park on the Super
Nintendo.
That's
a very inside joke, and maybe four of you will know what we're talking about, and we'll just leave it at that.
John Stevens. This is going to be quick. Did you two... Don't blow anything for me. Did you two watch New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 9 Tokyo Dome show? If so, favorite moment? No, I have not watched it yet. I am 100% certain it's fantastic. I grew up watching a lot of these. Not grew up, but I spent the past... I didn't watch a lot of U.S. wrestling in the 2000s. I watched a lot of Japanese wrestling, so I'm interested to see where it is now.
I'm happy I tracked it down online, not legally. I know that bothers you, but no. I had to check it out because pro wrestling, if you don't know, in Japan, it's treated like a serious sport and how it's covered and how the fans look at it. Obviously, they know it's worked, but they raise to it like a level of respectability that's not seen in the U.S.
Right.
And that comes through in the product. They treat the product like it's a sport.
Mm-hmm.
The rankings of wrestlers, win streaks, losses, they reference wins and losses constantly. They don't usually do that in U.S. wrestling. They don't usually bring up a guy who's on a losing streak.
The only time you ever see weird sets is like the Rumble. You'll be like, this guy was really good in last year's Rumble and the year before, but you don't see
They don't treat it like going back like a sport and saying this person won, this person beat this person him or lost. They do that in Japanese, at least in New Japan from what I see, because again, it builds some sort of believability of this is a sport. They care about wins and losses. They mm-hmm. care about being, they care about chasing championships because it's prestige and it's money. And I love that. I wish they had that in WWE. They don't have it really at all. The importance of titles where in U.S. wrestling, usually it's the World Heavyweight Championship and everything else is crap or doesn't matter. Right now, the U.S. Championship means absolutely nothing in WWE. The Intercontinental Championship changes hands every other month. Doesn't mean anything. They go out of their way to make sure that the Junior Heavyweight Championship means just as much. The Junior Tag Team Championships mean just as much. And so what was good about it, obviously, these are the best wrestlers in the world. Like, when you look at the card up and down, there's, you know what I mean? It's not like, this is a crappy match. Every match was good.
Right.
Even they had, like, do you think the UWF Unified Rule, which they have matches in Japan, for those of you who don't know, where they do, like, they treat them like UFC mixed martial art matches, where it'll be matches where it's a submission or knockout to win. To change it up, they even had that, and even that had psychology that was interesting to it. So they had, they actually hired Jim Ross to do it, Global Force Wrestling, which is Jarrett running, who's helping to like bridge the gap between all these different international wrestling entities. And he teamed up. Jarrett actually wrestled on the card as part of the Bullet Club, which is like their version of the NWO.
Right.
And so Jim Ross called the action with Matt Stryker. They did a good job. Jim Ross isn't the best at calling out play-by-play like moves, but he did it enough to at least push the story about who these wrestlers were and why you should care about it, especially to a first-time audience.
Well, and that's why I admire Jim Ross, is at the very least, you know he gives a shit about it. You know, he's trying. He's not collecting a paycheck. Jim Ross loves wrestling.
Yes.
He was. I mean, if you follow him on Twitter, he was really excited to be part of this.
And Matt Stryker... I'm very surprised, and it's a shame that WWE fired him, because Stryker was really coming into his own on color commentary, really like old school color commentary, telling you why certain moves, why wrestlers were using certain strategies, what they were doing to body parts, things like that. That really is a lost art that you haven't seen since like guys like Jesse Ventura would go down that route. So he was good adding the flavor of a lot of the moves that maybe JR didn't know the names to. But also adding in more of the details. So they worked very well together as a team, and I watched most of it. I didn't watch all of the event, but no, I was very, very, very impressed, not knowing who most of these wrestlers were, and just seeing how they acted in the ring and having JR and Matt Stryker put over their characters, it was enough to get me into the matches. And Kenny Omega, I've seen his work before. Awesome wrestler, Kenny Omega. Mm-hmm. If you watch the card, look for his match. I saw Kenny Omega wrestle an 11-year-old girl, and it was an awesome match. He obviously worked with her, and go find it. Look for Kenny Omega versus, I think it's like 11-year-old girl, 12-year-old girl. It is awesome how they put together a match, and like they, as realistically as they can do a match between them.
Right.
But Kenny Omega is a very cocky sort of character. Some of his matches, he actually uses like a Mega Man move where he like pauses time and then attacks the person, like stuff like that. So I was happy with it. Final question from another jester of Roanoke. How did you guys come by your seemingly extensive, well, thank you, video game
Thanks.
And pinball knowledge? Books, magazines, internet? Well, it's a combination. A lot of it's time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like... I've been following retro games or getting back into it since, I'd say, 97?
Right.
Probably definitely 98 with TASR's NES Archive and starting to learn about it. But I'd say even 97 is when I started to get, I think I went back to Funkoland and got an NES and said, I want to start doing this. And then it's the internet. It's talking to people. It's going to flea markets and seeing things you discover. Wow. I didn't know this existed. Then you run home and look it up. You know, that was a lot of it. You find a game you didn't know about, you put it in back when they were a dollar each and you play the game and find out about it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, yeah, just being immersed in it since, you know, I was a kid. You know, having had a system from every generation since the Nintendo, going back to, you know, I mean, I went to a flea market and bought an Atari 5200 when I was 12 because I'm stupid. I'm stupid and I love that system. You know, a lot of it was the boom on the internet in 97. The internet was a great place for nerds to gather. And, you know, back then, you know, video games were still very much that domain. So we all pooled our information and you learn a lot. And a lot of it is, I always joke, I credit a lot of my video game and pinball knowledge, any obscure knowledge that I have, to the fact that I'm a pretty bad insomniac. When you have nothing to do at night, and you're tired, and you're too tired to really, like, play a game, but your body won't let you sleep, you just read about topics that interest you. Pinball is actually interesting, I'm not going to lie. I knew a good deal about pinball because I played a shitload of it growing up in the 90s, but when I went to go buy my first pinball machine 2 years ago, I took 3 months and basically just read everything I could find on the internet about pinball, about repairing pinball, about the different machines, about the different designers. Pinball was a little bit easier, though, because there are only about 795 post-electromechanical machines.
Only 700?
Only, yeah. But, I mean, it is a lot, right? But when you think about learning about the NES library, well, it's like learning one video game library.
Okay.
You know, so it's not a ton to take in. You know, now if you want to go all the way back to electromechanicals and, you know, bagatelles and stuff like that, you know, there's a lot more to learn. But really, yeah, it's just putting the time into reading about what you're interested in. Some people might do better with videos. I do way better with reading. And yeah, that's it.
I think this, I know you get on collectors, but the one thing about collecting is that you have to have knowledge to know what you're buying and selling or looking for. And if it wasn't for me collecting games, there'd be no reason to learn about a lot of the video games that I have or even want to play. So there's something to be said for that too. It's what you come across. It's like when you learn about new topics, there's no direct way to do it. Sometimes it's osmosis, or you learn on the fly, or you get fragments and pieces. That's just how it works.
Yeah. I mean, you always get, I mean, yes, the general term collector is not something I'm particularly fond of, but we still had to learn about the games the same way. You know, I mean, so yes, as a collector, you are going to learn a lot about games because you have to know what you're buying and selling and trading. As a person who plays games, you have to know a lot about what you're buying and selling and trading so you don't end up with a pile of crap that you don't want. I mean, everyone's gonna pull from that same pool,
and you're never gonna know everything.
No,
so Ian and I don't know everything about video games.
No, absolutely not.
The good thing about us is that when we shoot the video game years, usually if one of us don't know that much, the other person does.
Yeah.
So it's like you're never gonna, like, I'm never gonna be an expert because I don't enjoy them that much on, like, dungeon crawling games and roguelikes
or Namco.
And I like some Namco. I love Skykid. And Pac-Man and RPGs because they're not my main focus, but right. I know a lot about platformers and sports games and, you know, adventure games and stuff that I gravitate towards, and weird games like
Gunship
Microprose games, damn it. F-15 Strike Eagle. So I don't know where we're going with this, but that's what it comes down to. And it's not like it's not easy to any topic. It just takes time, and you have to put in the time. And this is, again, this is like, Jesus Christ, how long was this? Like 17 years for me.
Yeah. It's not super genius stuff, man. It's just, it's all we've done with our lives.
Yeah, which is sad, I guess.
But yes. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, you know? I mean, you can pick up a lot on the internet these days, but it's just that this is the hobby that I've always known. It's just like, how, I mean, it's like, I've got friends, and I'm like, the fuck's wrong with blah, 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 this, that car thing? And they're like, oh, it's this, that, and the next thing. Well, they've worked on cars since they were old enough to be underneath a car. Sure. You know, it's just, what do you know? What have you always done?
Sure. I mean, before video games, I mean, I know I have a decent comic knowledge. I've fallen off it, but I used to know a lot about like all the comic origins, issues, and character arcs. It's just what you're interested in, and just, then you want to learn.
You ask Vani questions like that, and it's like watching popcorn just pop. She's like, boom, 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 boom.
For Spider-Man, I know most of the key issues, like what happens, like this is when this happens, but I'm not perfect. But.
Yeah.
All right. That's a fairly quick CU podcast, at least for us recently.
That's an hour and 38.
That's respectable. I like our 90-minute ones.
Yeah.
We only had 5 Q&As, is that why? We only had 5 Q&As. And we kept the wrestling talk to only about... I'm not going to count Randy Savage. That wasn't wrestling talk.
That's not wrestling talk. That's Savage. That's life talk.
That's life talk.
That's Randy Savage talk.
If you don't like wrestling, go out and watch... type in YouTube Randy Savage promo or interview and watch a block of him. And if you don't at least smile,
yeah,
you are dead inside.
You'll like the man at
the very least.
You'll
at least like the man.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. We love you, Randy Savage.
Yes, we do.
360. Snap into it.
180 degrees.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. We'll see you on, hopefully, the 28th. And then I will have a Flea Market Madness out. Hopefully, by then, I'll make it my mission. And then working on the DVD. I'll pre-orders for my DVD probably next month. I'd say for sure in February. Probably ship out early March. We'll see. Working on DVDs is terrible when you do it by yourself. That's not something that I love to do. I love video games, but not working on DVDs.
Mm.
And you would just want to go. But at least your triglycerides haven't popped through your nose and mouth yet.
Mm.
They will soon. So for Ian Ferguson, I am Pat Contry. This has been a completely unnecessary podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.